Hi, I'm Taylor Smurl, and I'm an experienced bartender.
And I'm Tommy Smurl. I'm an experienced drinker.
He's my dad, and together this is...
Neat! A weekly booze cast.
With history lessons, trivia, and a twist.
So pull up a stool to the bar and join us for the lowdown on your highball.
Hello and welcome back to the show. Hey Dad, how you doing?
Hello Tay, doing good. How are you doing?
Doing just fine.
Great.
Hey, did you have anything good to drink this week?
Well, I have to sadly confess that I had no drinks. We kept the kids quite a bit because everybody, Sydney was on hospital. They were getting ready to go to Disney. So we had the kids almost every day. And, you know, they drive you to drinking sometimes, but it's better if you're not drinking to try to keep up with them.
Okay.
I'll try to do better this week.
Well, I was like, you started that without sadly. It's like, well, I don't think it's ever sad to go a week without drink. I think that's good. Like, that's a good, healthy thing to do. That's okay.
Well, I mean, even when I do drink, you're talking about maybe a few drinks one evening a week. So, you know, I'm not an extensive drinker, per se.
I think that's, like, a healthy way of drinking. So, hey, good job.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Well, what about you? You have anything interesting?
I went to there was an event at a Wandering Barman, which is a brand of bottled cocktails, has like a tasting room bar not far from me. So I went there for the first time. It's funny. I mean, it was a cool experience. The drinks are nice. We got to see how they're made. But it's funny seeing a bar that doesn't, like, they just have all of their cocktails there on draft. So and they serve everything out of the same glass, over the same ice, no garnishes. So it was just like the cleanest bar setup I've ever seen. Because there's no, you don't need anything. It's just, this is the one glass we have. This is the ice we have. Everything comes off a tap. It's an interesting experience.
So is it like the place we go down at the beach where all the frozen drinks are? Was that Wet Willie's?
Wet Willie's.
Yeah. Is it like that? But not frozen.
The hipster version of Wet Willie's is exactly what the vibe was. Like,
so the alcohol's already in them and everything, huh?
Everything, yeah. You order your cocktails. It takes 2 seconds to make them. I mean, from the bartender angle, I think it's probably I don't want to say easy job. Like, that's not a bad thing. But like, what a breeze, you know. Just boop, boop. It was lovely though. It's very lovely interior space, and getting to see how they make things was cool too. Because, you know, and I have a lot of questions about bottled cocktails. Less so when they're all base spirits, more when there's like citrus and stuff involved. So it was fun to not be too obnoxious with my questions, but to get to see a little bit about how they make things shelf stable, how they deal with citrus. I mean, it's kind of what I assume they use, like citric acid and stuff, but still, like, it's a neat, very scientific process that's also very small scale. Like, it's very hands-on, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's a bar run by like equal parts scientists and bartenders, which I appreciate.
Wow. Well, was there a wide variety, or was there just like 3 or 4 to choose from?
Oh, no, they had, I think there were maybe 12, maybe, drinks.
Well, now Wet Willie's has about 30.
That's true. And they did not offer the ability to, like Wet Willie's does, which I don't know, maybe Wondering Barman, if you're listening, here's a great idea. Can people do mixers? Like, I want a little bit of the white Negroni, but can you top it with the margarita? Let me see what that's about.
Yeah.
I think after the group I was with, after everybody'd had a few, there was at least the concept introduced, like, can we order a little bit of everything, like a Jersey Turnpike? There are different names for it, but you just take like a little bit of every beer on draft in a glass.
A flight of them. Yeah, get a flight.
Like, but in one glass, in one. But nobody tried to order that, thankfully. I don't think that would have been respectful.
Now, see, when I was a kid, we would have misnomerly called that a zombie, because that's what we thought it was, every alcohol mixed together. So we would have called that a zombie.
There's a King's Cup is another word I've heard for that. But yeah. Anyway, so for this episode, I was inspired. It was a question that I think it's been a while ago that we were asked, but we haven't talked that much about rum, which seems a little silly on the show because it's one of the big ones, one of the big base spirits. Yeah. But, you know, I'm always a little hesitant to talk about the big guys just because it's so much. Like, you can't, like, talking about something like whiskey or vodka or rum or gin or tequila, it's just a massive category with a ton of stuff in it. So you kind of have to find the right small bite to take off that you can talk about in 20 to 30 minutes.
Well, not only that, we don't want to run out of episodes. We run through all the spirits there, and then what do we do? So,
well, yeah. And you cannot successfully cover any of those things in that amount of time. Yeah,
do it in pieces.
But a while ago, we got a question on the Patreon about when rum has an H in it, when it spells an H. What does that mean? Is that like
rum
when whiskey has the H, or is it something else? Which is a great question. And is it still rum? So I thought we could. That's just a nice little bite of the rum cake. That sounds tasty. A little area of rum we can talk about today. Rum agricole is what we're talking about. Rum with the H.
It's not rum.
No, it's just rum.
Just rum.
And rum is rum. Rum with the H is rum. I think it's best to think about like a big rum umbrella. A rumbrella, if you will.
Rumbrella. Man, you took a dad joke there.
It was right there. But like under it, you have lots of categories to subdivide rum. So you've got the big rumbrella. Rum agricole is just one of these. And it's sort of part of a subdivision that divides rum based on how it's made. So pretty much all rum, I don't think there's an exception to this, is made of some element of sugarcane. Sort of one of three ways, either molasses, so you harvest sugar cane to make into sugar, that leaves a byproduct behind that is molasses, so you ferment your rum from that. Or you can take your sugar cane juice and reduce it into a syrup, and you can ferment your rum from that. Or in the case of rum with the H, rum agricole, you just press your sugar cane fresh, and you let that ferment into what eventually becomes your rum. So rum with the H is made from fresh sugarcane juice. That's one of the important elements. That's really what sets it apart from most rum.
You just squeeze the shit out of it, huh?
Well, I mean, kind of. Like, you mill it. Like, you turn it to a pulp. And
yeah.
And, like, modern facilities have done cool things to do with the pulp. But you're like, traditionally, you actually will have like wild yeast that's just settled on the sugarcane, so it'll ferment naturally. But there's also cultivated yeast strains that can be used. So you press it, you mill it, you get your juice, you've got your natural yeast in there, or you inoculate it with your cultivated yeast, and then you distill it. There are some styles of agricole rum that specify the still, but in general, it can be column still, it can be a pot still, it can be any sort of still. And then after you distill it, it can be proofed down with water. It can be bottled straight or aged. So you can have it aged in a barrel. Usually it's oak, French oak or American oak that it will be aged in. But it doesn't have to be aged. So there's still a lot of variability there between like the proof, the aging, the still used. But because we're working from that fresh pressed sugarcane juice, it retains a lot of like very fresh, bright flavors. You get a lot of like how it tastes. Like, it's very different from mainstream rum. Mainstream rum is kind of, sweet or rich first. Rum agricole tends to be very grassy, very herbaceous. I always get a lot of lemongrass, a lot of floral notes, some minerality that you kind of associate with things like tequila. It's really unique. It's really beautiful.
Yeah, and it's kind of like different recipes that people will use that they think are best. Some people, there's one I read that they rechar barrels barrels have already been used, charred and used, and they'll rechar them and do it again because they like the notes that it brings into it. And then there's other ones that will use used bourbon barrels. They like to let the bourbon diffuse into it, and you don't really get a bourbon taste that much, but it changes the taste of the whole thing and the color of it.
Yeah, that's really, I mean, it is, you know, just as, even with all of that control of, like, it has to be distilled from this, and it's generally not doctored much as far as additives or anything. There's still a lot of variance in there. You know, it's not, again, not like bourbon. Not nearly that controlled. But more controlled than a lot of other rums.
Right.
Now, a bit of the history, which, you know, just going to be very brief here, because obviously rum with the H starts, its history starts in rum without the H. Rum distilling began in the Caribbean all the way back to the 1600s, and it was enjoyed mainly locally, because early rum, like, just origins of rum, this was just something to do with the immense amount of industrial waste that you got from sugarcane processing for sugar. So you would, you know, the Caribbean sugar was prized, you'd process your sugar, you'd ship your sugar all around the world, and then you just have these barrels of molasses left over that just, you got to do something with it. It would ferment naturally, get left out in the sun and start fermenting naturally, and people would find, like, oh, hey, now this makes something that I can get messed up on. And so early rum was, it was very rough, it was very, like, not a very, like, you know, refined art. And it was mainly just enjoyed by people locally, like, involved in rum producing or in the islands that it was being, that it was, that were processing sugarcane.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of things helped that change. Way too much history for us to talk about now. You know, a lot of cultural and political reasons, revolutions, wars. One of the big things that really affected it was the introduction of, like, cheaper, easier ways to get sugar. This happened, you know, in, like, the 1800s. You had blockades happening, as, like, you know, you had, like, the UK at war, and, like, France and Napoleon were involved, and no one could get sugar in Europe, and so everyone was like, let's find another way to make sugar, and they got the sugar beet, and the sugar beet was great, and it was easy, and it was quick, and then all these colonies that were devoted to making sugar, even after the blockades were gone, they were like, oh, no one wants our sugar anymore. So they had to find something else to do with it. And that's really, that along with the proliferation of rum through those centuries kind of led to the stage for rum agricole.
So you can't get blood from a turnip, but you can get sugar from a beet.
You can, yes.
And so that made kind of a collapse of the sugar market, and they had all this sugar cane sitting around. They said, what the hell are we going to do with all this? Nobody wants our sugar. We got all this sugar cane. We got to make something tasty.
Well, and with the increased demand for rum on more of a world stage, we're talking, like, by now we're at the 1900s, you had the French, specifically starting in the French colonies. This is sort of the other, I mentioned that fresh pressed sugarcane juice is one vital ingredient to rum agricole. The other one is, I think, a French sensibility.
Yeah.
So you had all of these, like, French colonies springing up in the Caribbean, starting in, like, the mid-1600s, and establishing what is now the French West Indies. So, you know, once things have changed, people want rum, people don't want sugar. They had all of these islands devoting to production of sugar. They're just like, well, what else can we do? You know, we're talking, like, Martinique, Haiti, Guadeloupe. Let's get into the rum business. And since we're not making sugar, we don't have a byproduct. Let's just make it fresh. Let's make it the product. So they start just using their sugarcane, freshening it press, and develop the style that becomes rum agricole, which was heavily influenced by French production methods on things like Armagnac. You know, one of the forerunners of rum agricole was Omer Clément, the founder of Clément rum, which is still amazing. It's one of my favorite rum with the H brands that's based in Martinique. And he just looked at French Armagnac and, like, how gently they would press the fruit and how simply they would just, you know, sort of make it into an eau de vie, and that's what you would drink. And he would just sub his sugar cane in for the fruit in that process, but otherwise it would be just as delicate, just as refined. And this was the style that emerged.
Well, another thing that I found interesting is several of the different brands, they're made basically the same way, but the difference is the soil that the sugar cane is grown in. And they will tell you, you know, this is grown in this type of soil and this is grown in this type of soil. And apparently that's what gives a lot of different complexities to the rum with an H is the soil that it's grown in. You don't think about that. You just think, well, the plant is the plant. Well, no, it's not. It's a byproduct of what it grows out of.
Well, and what you're talking about there is a term, you know, we've used this a few times, terroir, the land. And that's, you hear that brought up a lot in like winemaking. Sometimes you hear it brought up in like scotch, like single malt scotch. This idea that, you know, an element of the content of the soil, the elevation of the soil, if it's close to the sea, you know, if it gets a lot of salt air in the plant.
Yeah, this can affect. We have talked about that a lot with wine.
Yeah, and that is a true element. Again, sort of coming from, like, I think it makes sense. Like, we've got French people making rum, terroir is going to come into it. This is not an element in rum made from molasses, because basically the process of cooking the sugar just sort of destroys those more delicate notes that you get from the earth. Mm-hmm. But since that doesn't happen with agricole, terroir is a really important element. And it also, I think, you know, sort of speaking of the land, you know, it's rum agricole. That agricole part is, it's not just part of the name, I mean, agriculture, but like the land. That's also part of how it's made, in that this fresh pressed juice, unlike molasses, which you could ship anywhere in the world, this fresh pressed juice degrades rapidly. So if you're going to make rum from it, you need to make rum right away. So your rum production happens right next to your farming. They are tied together. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And also because of that, because they're so linked and because they happen on the land that it's grown, rum agricole, you know, nowadays sustainability is a big buzzword in the alcohol industry, but rum agricole in its origin strived for sustainability. You know, a lot of the practices of harvesting rum without the H, there was a lot of destructive processes, be it like the amount of chemical waste produced, you know, just sort of destroying your soil, burning your fields, those processes that just kind of make the land in large swaths unlivable. You can't do that with rum agricole, because everybody that's making it, that's drinking it, that's part of it, is also living on that land. So in its roots, it was a really sustainable style of rum.
You know, I hadn't thought about it, but you're right. There's a lot of the ones, the, you know, whether it's breweries or distilleries, that they do think a lot about that. When we stayed at that beer hotel, that was one of the things they talked about, was sustainability. And when we went on a tour of that distillery, that Watershed Distillery, they talked about it there too. So that is something that must, I guess, that you want to protect. That's part of your investment, you know, what you're doing there, and you want to protect that. So that's very important to them.
Well, and that's, you know, some people will roll their eyes, like, I just want to have a good drink, I don't want to talk about that. Like, but if you want to, you know, like, it's been a discussion recently, like, with our over-harvesting of agave in, like, the tequila world, that some of these big tequila brands have horrible practices. And agave plants take a long time to mature. You know, they take half a lifetime to become of use. Like, you can't just take all the agave and be like, oh, there'll be more tomorrow. So even if you're just being completely selfish, you should care about sustainability, because if you don't invest in sustainable brands, you might not get to drink tequila again. Hey,
yeah, that sounds like a good reason. No.
Yeah. So sustainability.
Not my lifetime.
Yeah. It's, even if you just want to be purely selfish, you should care about sustainability, but also you should care about sustainability because, you know, the earth and stuff. But by how it was produced, rum agricole was just more focused on sustainable centuries before words like that start to kind of get, you know, volleyed around in the alcohol world. And for a long time, it was really just sort of found where it was made. You know, you didn't have rum agricole on the main stage of the world until fairly recently. It was only in 96 that you had your first, like, appellation, your sort of control, like, this is what Martinique, like, rum is, issued by the French. And that, even those, like, that's legal restrictions on what can be called, like, AOC, like, rum agricole from Martinique, and that, you know, controls how it's made, how it's aged, and specifically where it comes from. And, you know, you also have unique identities popping up. And this is what's cool about it, is it's it's really tied to where it's made. So you have unique agricoles from all of the places that it's made. Like similarly, I had this confusion. There's something called Clarin, which comes from Haiti, which in my mind, it was similar to rum agricole. But really what it is it's the rum agricole that's made very traditionally in Haiti. So it is fresh pressed sugarcane juice. They use the yeast that naturally is abundant there. Like it's a very like respected, almost like a religious ceremony making this, and it's beloved in Haiti. And it is a style of agricole, but you can't separate it. Like nobody should make it any, there's no law that says you can't make something and call it that anywhere else, but you just shouldn't because it's cultural identity. Just kind of an element of rum agricole that I think is cool. But I mean, that being said, rum agricole, not a protected term as far as what you can call that. It's just, it is very much controlled to, you can't make it anywhere. You can't grow sugarcane because you have to process the sugarcane immediately. So, you know, you do have some cool agricole industries popping up in like Thailand, Australia, Hawaii, even.
But that AOC term, that has nothing to do with the representative from New York, huh?
No, no. That means you're going to make me fumble through French. Appellation d'origine contrôle, something like that. It's a control merit that you put on rum that basically just says the French government inspected the facilities and this is made up to quality. You know, every other, again, like I kind of, before doing my research, I didn't realize, which is dumb because everything is right there, how deeply French rum agricole is. I'm like, oh no, it totally is. When people, sometimes people just shorthand call it French rum. I'm like, no, it's not made in France, but it is very much French rum.
Well, it was developed by under French influence.
Yes. And it's, you know, and it's just as like articulate and nuanced and a little finicky. And I love that about it. It's my favorite style of rum.
Well, and they had practice at putting labels on things, defining things such as, you know, champagne. You know, they were already doing it with that. And with wines, different wines, they can only be called that if they're from this area and stuff like that. So that would be just a natural thing for them to do to protect their, you know, brand.
Well, and it stands apart from a lot of rum because rum is still to this day a little bit of the Wild West of major spirits in that, I mean, even when I say like it has to be from sugarcane, you're like, well, how different can you get if it has to be made from the same thing? You know, you look at something like whiskey, and whiskey can be made from corn, it can be made from rye, it can be made from all sorts of grains. Like, seems like rum should be more controlled. Sugarcane might be involved, but there's no rule on how much or what else can go in that bottle. So it really, like, rum is...
aged or not aged. You know, bourbon has requirements of being aged a certain amount of time. Yeah. But not, you know, not rum. Rum, yeah. You can get a one-week-old rum.
Well, and it can be made from a grain-neutral spirit that was bought, you know, dirt cheap, colored with every coloring and flavored with every flavoring in the world, and then you can slap rum on the label. So there is a bit of an element of rum that's like yeah, you gotta know rum to drink good rum because there's a lot of it out there. But agricole is sort of a little niche where even while you'll run into like areas of control here and there, appellations of control, it's more the thing that makes it special and the thing that makes it delicious is more just that like part of the way you make it. You have to care about it because it's growing right there. It's growing right next to you.
And the alcohol content changes too because it comes out with a higher proof and they usually water it down. So some water it down more and some water it down less.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, it's not like the biggest section. It's not the most like giant representation in the rum world. But you know, there's major brands. You know, I mentioned Clément, they were one of the ones that were sort of quintessential in establishing some appellations of control. I mean, Rum JM is one of my go-tos for cocktailing. Barbancourt. There's so many. And it's cool because you can look up any specific place of production and like each distillery has a very unique and specific identity, a very unique way of doing things. It's not such a big market that there isn't still like a lot of identity in it, which I think is cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It said that one of them was describing one of a rum agricole. It was a master bartender, and he said, it has a funk that no other rum has. He says it essentially tastes like wet earth.
Before we started, I was talking a bit about it, because I don't even, you've never had rum agricole, correct, Dad?
No, I never have.
I was trying to describe it, and to me, it's got, like, there's elements of almost like tequila to it, in that it has that ability to have earthiness, grassiness, vegetal qualities, minerality, you know, like some, mm-hmm. like specifically like mezcal, like some mezcals can taste like you're licking a rock, but in a really good way. Like some I love anything that tastes like it, like licking a rock. I usually like, and I don't know what that means about my palate, but I just know that if somebody describes a spirit that way, I'm like, I'm gonna like it. Some agricoles have that minerality to it. And again, that's because it's very delicate. It's a delicate spirit. And I want to talk about how to mix with it, but I think there's another common question on the subject of agricole that you might get, which is, so we said it's a sugarcane, fresh pressed sugarcane juice, you know, that's how it's made. How is it different than cachaça? So,
and first you have to learn how to pronounce cachaça, because it doesn't look like that.
Cachaça, also made from fresh pressed sugarcane juice. It is specifically from Brazil, though. And now beyond that, there are some stylistic elements that I think there's nothing you can really pin down. Like, in general, you use, if you're going to age cachaça, most aged cachaças will be in local woods, which is really exciting and cool. You just see like all sorts of different barrels that you don't find anywhere else in the world they'll age cachaça in. So that's an element of cachaça that you seek out. Whereas with, as we mentioned, with agricole, you're usually using like French oak, sometimes American oak, but it's a bit more of a traditional aging, like charred barrels that have been purposely sort of, some of the flavor has been removed already because you don't want an abundance of woody flavor. Cachaça wants the wood. It wants the flavor.
The more wood, the better.
Yeah. A lot of cachaça is unaged, but not always. It can be aged. A lot of agricole is made in certain stills, but there's overlap in what still. It's really just, you know, there are two categories that are made from the same fermented base. And beyond that, I think if you like one, you know, you'll probably like the other, and there's a lot of unique variety within them. So they're not, I can't say they're the same because they're made with completely different mindsets, but you will on occasion run into an unaged cachaça and an unaged rum with an H, and they will taste very similar because the same choices have been made.
Well, it was made the same way with the pressed fresh juice from the sugarcane. It just is the process that it goes through to get to the final product.
And there are no rules in either distilling culture about what that process is, to such a point that you couldn't get some overlap. Now, cachaça did start, like cachaça's been distilled in Brazil since like the 1600s. So cachaça was around before rum agricole, but rum agricole was not a copy of cachaça. It developed independently in the French West Indies. So if you like one, I think you'll like the other. If you know how to mix with one, you should try to mix with the other. There are differences. There are outliers, but there is a lot of overlap.
Yeah, and there's others that are now catching on to it and coming into the scene. Like they said that they're making it in Australia and a few other places. And, of course, it won't be called rum agricole because it doesn't fall under that. And they'll come up with a different name, but it's being made through that process.
Yeah. Well, it is. I think it's a beautiful, just the concept of fermenting something from something that is made very fresh, that is quickly to degrade. I'm not saying it couldn't be made low quality, but there is a certain assurance in freshness in it. And, you know, I think that's, I haven't had a cachaça that I haven't liked, and I haven't had an agricole that I haven't liked. So, you know, just a fan of the category, really.
Just try it out and see what it's like. I'm going to try to see if I can track down a bottle of that, see what it tastes like.
Well, and speaking of trying it out, drinking agricole, it really depends on what you come across. You know, I think, again, you can always just drink it straight. It is so, the combination of like vegetal, grassy, herby notes, and then the sweetness and the lightness of it, I really do think like agricole is great just on the rocks, maybe with a squeeze of lime in there. You know, it is similar to cachaça in that it works fantastically in a caipirinha or a daiquiri. But there is one. I mean, it's a cocktail, but it's also sort of an event that's very popularly involving rum agricole, and that is tea punch. Not mm-hmm. tea. Lots of things that make sense in writing and not over a podcast. It's tea as in T-I, not T-E-A, but it is pronounced tea. And it's sort of it means like tiny punch. And it's just usually like the way that it's traditionally served is you just kind of get served like glassware, syrups, limes, and then agricole rum, and you just kind of make your own in the glass. But it can also just be made simply with that. So it's almost like an agricole lime sugar old fashioned. I don't know. And that it is very similar to, again, like a caipirinha, but you kind of make it yourself.
You have to get an experiment with it.
Yeah. Well, it's just like, you know, I've got a really good bottle of rum agricole. I got some fresh limes. Here's some sugar, and you've all got glasses and ice. Go to town. I would love that, actually.
Yeah.
Like, I don't have to ask anybody to work for me, you know, make a drink for me. I can control, like, maybe I just want something that's like limeade with a little bit of booze. Maybe I want, like, you know, something stronger. It's a just as you like it service.
Well, there you go. There's something else I'd never heard of, and now you've told me all about that.
Yeah, and something I would highly recommend if you're a fan of rum, or again, if you're a fan of tequila, if you like lighter rums, I think you should absolutely do not be afraid of rum with the H. It's not expensive. You can find bottles of like the difference is like buying a $30 bottle of like rum agricole. You're going to get something that's probably a million times better and more quality than that $30 bottle of large brand rum. Rum with a pirate on the label. I won't name names.
All right.
Well, there you go. There's everything you need to know about rum agricole.
You could find out through experimenting.
Yeah. Thank you, Dad, for being here.
Well, thank you, Tay, for having me. I learned something once again. And
thank you all for joining us. Of course, if you want to find us on social media, you can do that. We are Neat Boozecast on Twitter and Instagram. We are also neattheboozecast@gmail.com. And hey, if you want to ask us questions or get bonus content, get stickers, get coasters, all sorts of fun stuff, we have a Patreon. You can check that out. If you want to talk about your experiences with rum, with or without the H, honestly, that's fine. Just general rum discourse. You can do that.
At Neat the Boozecast group page on Facebook. We're right there.
Go there, do that. All right. Well, hey, I've been Taylor Monroe. Hey,
don't forget, we're going to appear on the virtual Mabim Bam Candle Nights. Oh, yeah, anybody that's interested in seeing that? That's the 17th.
17th.
Isn't the 17th, right?
By the time this goes up, you'll still have time to put that in your calendar.
Yeah.
Some very special drinks there.
That's right.
Classic holiday recipes that you won't be able to see anywhere else. And it's for a good cause. Buy a ticket, it goes to charity.
There you
All
go.
Right, cool.
All okay, right. I've been now, who are you?
Stop it.
I've been Tommy Smurl.
And this has been...
Me! Trying to get our plug in, you know? I had to get our plug in.
You gotta work me ahead when you get plugged something.